To Want a Boy, Chapter 3. I went to sleep easily that afternoon. My body glowed with a satisfaction I had never known since puberty. It was past 7 when I finally awoke. Bob lay next to me, caressing my body with feather fingers. I looked down at my stiff member, already rigid with desire. I burst out laughing. "What's the matter?" Bob sounded hurt. I patted him gently. "I've spent at least 20 years thinking I was undersexed, and it looks like I'm trying to make up for the whole damn time in one day." "I'm sorry. I just woke up first, and I lay there looking at you, and then I needed you," Bob whispered.
"I need you too, Bob."
My voice was unnaturally hoarse. I turned on my side and pulled him to me. He surrendered completely. It was a time to be bold. I had let this boy guide me through the steps to passion over and over, and now it was time for me to take the lead. My hand slid down the length of his lean body, and I explored the velvet texture of the inside of his legs. He quivered in my arms as I worked my hand slowly up. I would not be a bull with this boy. I would learn control, build him slowly, and savor every caress with him. Man does not need to be shown everything. The mind, once wantonly tuned in on the sexual needs, will improvise and invent, and now I had to show him the very most. I lay there, tenderly fondling his trembling genitals, and suddenly I knew. I saw a picture in my mind of what I must do with this boy. Gently, I pushed him away. "I want to do what you did to me." The words were still too difficult, too new to say. He shivered and lay back on his back. "No," I whispered. "Get on my chest." He scrambled up and straddled my chest with an urgency that told me he wanted what I had offered. Slowly, he worked his pelvis forward as I needed his little ass pulling him toward me. My eyes were hypnotized by the small, precious organ he gyrated toward me. His bag rubbed against me as it moved across my chest. Hungrily, I opened my mouth and my tongue worked in anticipation. And then that sweet prick was in my mouth and I tasted the velvet texture and I was indescribably happy. I slowly sucked him into my mouth until my lips were clear to the base of his little organ and his bulbs rubbed up against my lips, and he groaned loud and writhed wildly on my chest. My tongue curled around the length of his cock, and then I worked up to the base of the head and quivered the tip of my tongue on his seat of passion. As I pulsed against his pulse, I began to suck in rhythm, drawing deep at his base as he quaked above me. He began working it, in and out, speeding his pace rapidly, and I didn't want this. I wanted to prolong it now. Make it last until I could drive him to a peak he would never forget. Gently, I stripped his manhood one last time and regretfully let it free. I pulled him further forward and sucked in his balls. All of them. I worked them with my tongue, rolling the balls in my mouth and sucking hungrily on them. Then I spewed them out as I had his Peter. And I pushed forward again and my tongue curled into a tube, and I entered the tight cave of desire. I worked my tongue furiously, and he moaned his appreciation. Slowly, I withdrew and returned to his sweet rod. As I sucked it in, I brought my teeth carefully onto the seat of his passion and gently nipped at him, and he cried out, "Oh, God, you're good! You're good! You're good!" The frenzy now of his thrusts into my mouth were too urgent to tease, and I clamped down my jaw and ate hungrily at his meat. Then he gave of his life fluid, spurting it out in a spasm of pulsing vibrations. Then he collapsed backward on my torso and lay mutely, like he was dead. I went into the bathroom to wash, but before I could finish, he had descended upon me. "Bert! Bert!" And he flung himself at my feet on his knees and swallowed all he could of my cock. "Let me get back in bed," I urged, trying to dislodge him. "No," he gurgled, never releasing his mouth from me. "Close the door," he demanded. "Just close the door!" And his voice was so full of passion, I reached up and closed the door, and found myself staring at a full-length mirror. The sight of him clinging to my thighs, stripping my bull rod, almost triggered my seat instantly. With a terrible effort, I held and watched the wanton scene with shivering ecstasy. He kneaded my balls with his hand, pulling them to and rubbing the sack against his skin. His fingers explored, poked, fondled, and I spread my legs like a war god ready for combat. My chest expanded, and I flexed my muscles as I reached down to cradle the boy's head with my hands. Slowly, rhythmically, I began working my pelvis, pushing my rod farther into his mouth. And the mirror reflected my motions and heightened them. I began grinding my loins round and round the warm, wet mouth sucked hungrily, stripping my skin, eating, biting, chewing my flesh. The sight of all this in the mirror built my ardor, and I pulled him away from me, picked him up forcibly, and carried him to the bed. Then I attacked his genitals again with my own mouth while he stripped hungrily at mine. My head rested on his inner thigh, and he quickly gripped my head like a vice, and I was lost in a wanton tunnel of erotic sensations. He worked to bring my legs up where I could squeeze him, too, and when my upper leg squeezed in on his head, bound as tightly as one, my hands hugged him to me, and his surrounded me as far as possible and clung with a frantic grip. Our bodies, snugly throbbing against each other, was honey sweet. With almost frantic fervor, we rode the crest of the wave for long, yielding moments before we shuddered over the brink and spewed out our pulsing flow into each other's mouth. The bittersweet feel of the fluid attested to our tantalizing lovemaking, and we lay as we were, contentedly hugging one another as our nerves fluttered and vibrated, in intoxicating release. 40 years of miserable self-denial suddenly washed over me, and I sighed in contentment, knowing that my trial was now over. We had a light dinner, and by the time I pulled the big Kenworth back on onto the highway, it was dusk and nearly time to turn on my headlights. We crossed the lazy Colorado into California, and were soon moving across the sand dunes at the eastern edge of the desert. There were so many questions I wanted to ask. So many loose ends. How long have you known you were... this way? I asked finally. I think I was born knowing, Bob laughed. I am convertible, though. What does that mean? I asked. I'm like you. I can function with a woman, too, he answered. But I prefer men. Can't everyone? I asked. Hell no, he laughed. Some men can't even get a hard-on around abroad. I shook my head. I sure got a lot of things to learn, I guess. There's a lot you don't want to learn, Bert, Bob said seriously. How do you mean? There are many kinds and degrees of homosexuality. There are toughs that wear leather jackets and try to look as mean as hell, and there are men who are so effeminate that they can pass as women, clothes and all. Between the two, there are a million fine gradations. Personally, I hate either extreme. I'd hate it, too. Perhaps I'm a bit sensitive about it, but I can't stand to be seen with anyone effeminate. I'm not ashamed to be a homo, but I also enjoy being a man. I have no desire to act like a woman, he mused. I laughed at that. I'm afraid I'd look pretty silly imitating a woman, even if I wanted to. Bob laughed, too. No, I could hardly picture you in that role, he said. Seriously, Bert, you're going to have to be very careful at first. Your naivete is part of your charm, but you could sure get taken easily. How do you mean? I asked. You'd better bone up on your laws, especially where it concerns hitchhikers and minors. You don't have to worry about me. But I won't be 21 for another week, and we just crossed the state line. Don't ever do that one again. All the way into San Diego, Bob rambled on and on about laws and justices and problems of being homosexual. I listened responsively and filed away everything he told me. I had much to learn. Bob didn't touch me at all that night. I didn't need it, and he seemed content, too. He did ask me if we could stop and get a motel between San Diego and Los Angeles. I agreed, and he suggested we get one on the beach. With your dark hair, you should tan fast, and I'd like to see you all brown before you head east again. How long can you stay in L.A.? I don't know. Until I get a return load, I guess. I was already picturing myself lounging around on a beach. Hell, I didn't even own a pair of trunks. Maybe it was time to stop the push, and enjoy this life I was racing through. Maybe I could take a few days, I was thinking more aloud than talking. Great! I'll find us a place on the beach and we'll be two brown beavers in no time. I hated to have any agent see me until I had a really good tan anyway. And so, Bob and I spent a tender week together in a cabin on the beach. It was a week I will savor the rest of my life. I spent other nights, other weekends with Bob, for I saw to it, easily in my double life, that I picked up frequent runs out to the coast. I did not look for any other sex. I was satisfied with what Bob and I had going for us. I did notice, however, that I could again enjoy my own tad without any of the frightening reaction. I would always love him, want him, idolize him, but I was better able now to control it. Tad had known something was very wrong, and his relief over my apparent return to normalcy was obvious. This alone kept me from slumping into the pit of guilt and self-pity. When I was with Bob, I was much too happy, too stimulated to have time for guilt feeling. But whenever I left him to return home, I would begin to curse my weakness. As my relations with Tad improved, I could no longer justify hating myself. It was like taking a pill. Without my weekends with Bob, I could not live in my home and function as a father. With them, I could make my son happy and raise him with the counsel and guidance he needed. I am lucky, I suppose, to have this release. I have never suffered the torture of self-hatred that must plague other men. And so my life took on new vibrancy and meaning. It was like watching early talkies all my life and then suddenly experience panoramic color with stereophonic sound. I was satisfied that my life was now complete. Of course, it couldn't last.